Welcome to this podcast from the Medical Journal of Australia. My name is Sam Hunt, the MJA's news and online editor. Today we are discussing how to handle challenging patient interactions. My special guest today is Dr. Owen Bradfield, the Chief Medical Officer for the Medical Indemnity Protection Society, which sponsored this podcast. Dr. Bradfield is a general practitioner and a lawyer. Dr. Bradfield, Owen, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks very much, Sam. Thanks. Good to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Dr. Bradfield, what are some of those difficult interactions that doctors can face?
Yeah, look, Sam, there's lots of situations that can give rise to sort of challenging patient interactions and consultations. I mean, just to name a few, breaking bad news or talking about end-of-life care and decisions can be particularly challenging for doctors, I guess particularly in circumstances where, you know, it's unexpected. So delivering a diagnosis of a serious illness or telling a patient about a terminal illness can be one of the most difficult interactions for doctors. Some doctors who work in perhaps palliative care or aged care do that more commonly than other doctors. But certainly, you know, that's one that can have an emotional impact on the doctor.
And Dr. Bradfield, what are some of the trends you're seeing in the medico-legal world at the moment?
I think increasingly as well in medical defence, we're seeing claims and complaints that arise from situations where patients may feel as though some of their needs haven't been met or their expectations haven't been met. And so very often we deal with claims or complaints that arise from perhaps a situation where a patient's been particularly aggressive or demanding and where that's been very challenging. We live in a multicultural society, and I think, you know, language and cultural barriers can also be a factor that can play a role in perhaps a mismatch in patient expectations. But I think as well there are, you know, increasingly areas of medical practice that really throw up some ethical dilemmas as well. So, I mean, one example that comes to mind is voluntary assisted dying. So every state in Australia now has legislation where voluntary assisted dying is either lawful or will be lawful. I'm thinking of New South Wales, it will be lawful there in November. Northern Territory and ACT still don't yet have that legislation. But everywhere else in Australia, you know, it's a new area for doctors to have to navigate and traverse. And with that, there's some really complicated and challenging questions that doctors have to deal with. You know, I know for many doctors, the idea of voluntary assisted dying is anathema to their ideas of what it means to be a doctor. Some feel very strongly that it's not something that they want to be involved in. And I guess, you know, sometimes really struggle to know how best to have those complex and difficult discussions with patients. So there's really lots of situations where, you know, there is the potential for difficult patient interactions. And I guess knowing how to manage those, of course, is key. Open disclosure is another example that comes to mind as well. So here in Victoria, there's recently been legislation enacted where certainly in a public hospital setting, there are now requirements to engage in open disclosure, what we call the statutory duty of candor. And so that also creates, I guess, difficult situations for doctors where they have to discuss with patients, you know, medical errors or managing the complications or the consequences of perhaps when treatment hasn't gone according to plan. So, yes, certainly lots of very challenging areas for doctors to have to navigate these days.
And we're not just talking about patients here. Families can also react quite strongly sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, all of those difficult interactions that I've talked about apply equally as well to families. And again, I think of open disclosure, it's very often the families that have a need to understand what's happened. I mean, sometimes where there has been a medical error, you know, perhaps the patient might have had a procedure or undergone surgery and, you know, there were some complications during the surgery. And so the patient may still be in ICU or ventilated, and so it's very much the family that are the recipients of that information, and the family are the people that the medical team, you know, is having to, I guess, have some of those really challenging and difficult conversations with. And similarly as well, I think with voluntary assisted dying, you know, there's sometimes the expectations of the patient and the expectations of the family may not always align. And sometimes families can be very surprised to know that their loved one, the patient, is in fact inquiring about voluntary assisted dying. So absolutely, I think all of these challenging situations apply not just to patients, but also to their families. But I guess the added complication is, you know, sometimes the expectations of patients and families don't always align, and then that just adds an extra layer of complexity.
And Dr. Bradfield, you would know this firsthand, having trained as a general practitioner. What are the impacts of this kind of behaviour on doctors' well-being?
Yeah, look, great question. I guess there's the immediate sort of impact, and then there's the longer-term impacts. Dealing with patient aggression or dealing with patients whose expectations haven't been met is one of those things that requires practice and skill and experience in managing. You know, so I know for me personally, as a, you know, as a GP, when I was at medical school and also when I was training as a GP, we went through some of these scenarios and we role played and how to manage some of the conversations and, you know, thinking very carefully about body language and using words precisely in a non-threatening manner. So I think it's really important. These are things that, you know, do require practice and training. But of course, despite all of those efforts to become skilled in how to manage these situations, sometimes it can be unexpected or can come at the end of a long day. And so I think, you know, in the short term, it can have an emotional impact very much on doctors. You know, it can cause stress and frustration and anxiety. And I know from my own experience, I had a situation many years ago as a GP registrar when, you know, I said no to a patient who requested Schedule 8 medications. And I recall just, you know, how fearful I felt at the time for my own personal safety. So, you know, and I think that definitely needs to be recognised, not just by the doctor themselves and to know how to look after themselves in the aftermath of such an event, but also I think it's important for colleagues and peers and workplaces to understand just the impact that situations like that can have on doctors. And then I think about the longer-term impacts. Just listening to the radio, looking at the TV, reading the newspapers, you know, we often see and hear of situations where frontline healthcare workers have been the recipients of workplace violence from angry and aggressive patients. And there's all sorts of reasons why this can occur. That can take a toll on practitioners and on the profession. So it can, you know, lead to psychological distress, burnout, insomnia, other sort of physical symptoms of burnout as well. But I guess it can also have an adverse impact on workplace satisfaction and then ultimately on, I guess, retention of doctors and ultimately on workforce shortages. So the impacts, the implications of these issues are, you know, can be wide-ranging and longer term.
My special guest today is Dr. Owen Bradfield, the Chief Medical Officer for the Medical Indemnity Protection Society. Dr. Bradfield is also a general practitioner and a lawyer. Dr. Bradfield, Owen, let's talk about de-escalation. What can doctors do to calm these difficult situations?
The most important thing when you're faced with a challenging situation is to remain calm as best you can. You might not feel very calm inside, but at least to use body language that demonstrates to the patient that you are actively listening to what they're saying, that you're giving the patient your full attention, allowing them to express their concerns and frustrations and trying not to interrupt them in the process. I'm showing empathy as well and validating their feelings are all really important. I think wherever possible, trying to use non-threatening body language, you know, respect personal space, speak calmly and clearly, but also you know, think about your own safety as well. So, you know, maintain very clear boundaries. So despite if the patient is starting to become angry and upset, just being very clear about what you consider to be acceptable behaviour. But of course, you know, remove yourself from the situation as soon as you can. If you do feel unsafe, it's better to sort of walk out of that situation and to leave the consultation room as quickly as you can, even if nothing's going to happen. But if you feel uncomfortable, then you know you need to listen to those instincts when that occurs. And we can talk through some of those situations with our members after the events occurred. And, you know, I think documentation is really important. That's often, you know, one of the most important pieces of medico-legal advice that we offer, you know, is to just clearly document what happened, try to be as objective as possible when making those notes, you know, try to avoid any pejorative language or you know, I guess making drawing conclusions, but just stick very much to the facts of what happened, what was said, what you said, what you did, how you responded, and yeah, just being as objective and clear and precise when making those records.
And Dr. Bradfield, in this kind of context, what can medical defence organisations do to help?
I guess the most important thing we can do is provide an independent and educated sounding board. So we have medical advisors, some very experienced medical advisors at MIPS, for example, and when you talk through the situation with them, they can not only provide sort of some medico-legal tips, so in terms of ensuring, you know, adequate documentation, but also they can provide some peer support and collegiate advice. So, you know, things to think about in terms of communication, things to think about in terms of follow-up following that difficult consultation. They can also ask, how are you going? How are you feeling? What's it like? What was that situation like for you? We are very accustomed to assisting doctors who've been through, you know, some unpleasant experiences, and so we can help to link them in with talking about their health, thinking about whether they have their own GP, but also pointing them in the direction of support, third-party support as well. So there's certainly doctors' health programs across the country that can assist in those situations. The AMA, the Medical Board of Australia, and ARPRA all have resources for doctors, but also just talking to peers as well can be immensely helpful when something like this occurs.
We see on the television all the time advertisements for medical negligence and get in touch, no win, no fee. How important is it to make sure that doctors get good quality advice?
I couldn't emphasise enough the importance of getting in touch with MIPS or your medical defence organisation as soon as you become aware of a claim or a complaint against you, or even a situation, a consultation that you think could give rise to a claim or a complaint in the future. So we definitely know that claims and complaints against doctors are on the rise. We know that regulators are creating special hotlines for patients and the public to contact if they have concerns about health practitioners. So they're really strengthening their drive towards public protection.
And how will a medical defence organisation be able to help?
We can provide you with advice about how to respond to a complaint, how to manage any ongoing patient interactions, even before a complaint or a claim arises. So there's lots of useful information and advice that we can provide, but we can only provide you with that advice if we know about an incident that's occurred. So thank you. It's a great question, and I really can't emphasise enough the importance of doctors getting in touch with MIPS or their medical defence organisation should they be aware of something that could give rise to a claim or a complaint in the future.
And Dr. Bradfield, I'm sure there are doctors listening to this now who need to find out more or are ready to take that next step. Where can they find out more about de-escalating patient interactions and perhaps getting more help?
In addition to the resources I've already mentioned, there's a lot of resources out there to help doctors in terms of their health and their well-being. For medico-legal advice and support, I mean, obviously MIPS members can give us a call on 1800 061 113. If you're not a MIPS member, then contact your own medical defence organisation. It's really important to think about what further information you need. So if it is about a specific incident that's occurred and you're wanting advice around some particular aspects of an incident that's occurred, you need specific advice tailored to your needs, then you should contact your medical defence organisation because there may be things that you can do that you haven't already thought of to reduce any medico-legal risks or implications that might arise.
Dr. Owen Bradfield, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks very much, Sam. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Owen Bradfield is the Chief Medical Officer for the Medical Indemnity Protection Society, which sponsored this podcast. Dr. Bradfield is also a general practitioner and a lawyer. You can find more podcasts from the Medical Journal of Australia on our website at mja.com.au or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening.